and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, as always, by the groom-to-be. It's Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Yes, this might be the last podcast I record before I get married on the 20th
of
December.
Woo-woo!
Yeah.
And as a present, we got you, but nothing. We didn't get
No, it's... I'm happy to do these podcasts now. We can get ahead of this, and I'm going to be doing absolutely nothing work-wise next week, at least, probably not until the new year. So yes, I'm really sorry, everyone, but we'll be okay.
You don't have to apologize, and that's okay because we know, you know, the winter meetings are happening right now. That's great. You know, we do not cover, like, breaking news and stuff on this podcast, but, you know, it'll give us a chance to let a little bit more of the off-season play out, and then we get, you know, back and hit the ground running again in January. We're not taking the off-season off. We're taking a couple of weeks for Nick to, you know, put his personal life before work, which is sometimes really important to do.
And yeah, it is.
Agrees.
And yes, Cashew, my cat, he's like, well, ahead of all of that is my tale inside this podcast. So,
So that'll give us a little bit more time to see how things play out. And then when we get into a little bit more of the off-season stuff, we'll know where people have landed and things like that.
Yeah.
Last week, we covered my presentation at First Pitch Arizona, where I went over some of the traits that make a top 25 starting pitcher. So I encourage you to listen to that. And I assume Nick and I haven't confirmed it, but I assume I might be doing something similar.
Oh, yes. You're going to be doing that presentation at PitchCon, which will be at the end of January.
Yes. So that will happen again.
Through 31st, I think, or 29th through the 1st of February, whatever that weekend is.
Great.
Last year, we raised, I think I want to say, near $15,000 again. We've raised over $40,000 for charity since it started.
That's awesome.
No, more than that, over $50,000. So we hope to keep adding to that as we are going to be donating to Stop ALS once again. And we hope you guys will join us and hit our $10,000 goal.
Yeah, it's a tremendous accomplishment. It's an awesome, you know, day to be a part of everything with everybody, you know, or days. So, you know, hopefully everybody joins for that. We are going to pivot today to something that connects to Nick's First Pitch Arizona presentation, which you did with Jeff Erickson.
Nope, Jeff Zimmerman. Very close.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of Jeffs. Jeff Erickson liked a post of liked a tweet of mine today. So
his humble brag.
His name is in my. I mean, it was a silly tweet about a sport that you won't like me to acknowledge on this podcast. So I won't.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
But yeah. So his name was in my head. With Jeff Zimmerman. So Nick and I are going to talk about some of our favorite starting pitchers who are currently going outside of the top 300 on ADP. Mm-hmm. I just want to give you a little bit of runway here at the start to share some of the general thoughts that you had in terms of what makes somebody a good target outside of the top 300, because that was what your presentation was on.
So if you've been listening a bit over the past few months, you'll have heard that I've switched, or at least leaned more heavily into volume as really the path to upside, which sounds strange. Essentially, I'd be going for strikeouts and the big stuff guys, and those are so fun and a lot in electric. And yes, sometimes those do hit, absolutely. However, what we do see is more consistently are the ones who get the opportunities, and it's actually easier to figure out who has those opportunities more often. So as I did my presentation about adding starters past 300, first and foremost, it is really, really hard to find a starter that is worthwhile past pick 300. And the first piece of advice I have to everyone who is not in a absurdly deep one, like an AL only, is that your last picks of your draft should be focused on the short term, not the long term. Don't think of it as, okay, well, this could work in like 3 weeks into the season. This could work, you know, I'll have this stash for a little bit. If you have an IL spot, fine. But instead, try to just say, right now, is there a guy going the opening weekend of the season that I can start and then make an assessment on? Because there is no worse feeling in fantasy than drafting an SP5 and then having them get skipped that first time, and then you're waiting 10 days for them to get a start. Or maybe actually they do start the first time, but it's against the Dodgers and you're not going to do that because that offense is too good. So just plan accordingly with that. And the best way to find some value past 300 are those ones you can throw 90 pitches out of the gate and then somehow be Merrill Kelly and just be good the entire season. Be Noah Cameron, who just was incredibly good when he got his spot. These are guys who are more of the Toby brand than they are the Troy Melton brand of overwhelming dominance.
Yeah, I really like that. I think it also helps you to guard against yourself in a way.
Yeah.
Because we tend to fall in love with a lot of the like potential risers, right? The guys who flash and we think, hey, if they make the rotation, you know, there's a lot of upside there. And this year, you know, think of like the Jack Leiters and the Chris Bubiches and the...
That's, yeah. I mean, no
Debbie Matthews is, and guys like that. Mm-hmm. And some of them hit for sure. If you do what you're saying and say, hey, I'm going to focus on guys, unless there's somebody I love and I'm like, I have to have this guy because everything in me says this player is going to have a really strong year. If I do what you're saying and try to focus on guys I can make quick assessments on based on if they pitch in the weekend, you are naturally choosing a pitcher who's 1 through 3 in a team starting rotation, which means you are naturally limiting yourself from the guys who earn the number 5 spot in the rotation and have a shot. And so even if you're just kind of like guarding yourself against loading up too much on those guys. And that's not saying you can't take them. It's saying you're not only taking them. You might take one or two of those guys, and then you're taking your Merrill Kellys, or, you know, I'm trying to think of, I was going to say Mitch.
No, well, here's the, I'll help you out here, Eric. I do this every year for my top 200 article, is I outline two different tables. One, the first is who did we draft who is valuable right away past pick 290 or 275 or so?
Yep.
And then who are the ones across the season as it went on who were undrafted helped? So I'm just going to focus on the first one. And it has a very common attribute, right? Matthew Boyd, Merrill Kelly, Chris Bubich, Andrew Abbott, Ryan Nelson, Jameson Taillon, Brady Singer, Edward Cabrera, Noah Cameron, Gavin Stone is here and he shouldn't be here. And I, because he didn't pitch the entire year, I'm replacing him with someone else. I don't remember who. Jose Soriano, Justin Verlander, David Peterson, Casey Mize, Max Scherzer, those guys all helped out of the gate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not, you know, you're really over the top Jared Jones type as it was the previous year. Luis Gil, right?
Right.
It was more of your 90 pitch, 22 strikeout rates, you know, 22%. That is what brought you value. So go after that kind of type. Yes, there are a lot of swatches in here. Southpaws with a tight changeup, right? So maybe you want to lean into that, but just find yourself just a generally good 90 pitch guy on a good team, pitching regularly, and hopefully that opening weekend, and you should do well.
I will say, did you say Max Scherzer?
Yes,
because it wouldn't have been Scherzer. Just
right, not out of the gate. He did need like 2 months.
He didn't come back until the end of June, and I know because
put that one in there
because I took shares of him. And I was like, Scherzer's gonna. He's always good when he pitches. He's gonna pitch to start the year, and then I was like, oh, he's not. He's not gonna pitch for a long time. And so that was a little frustrating, but that's okay. Yeah. So we're using NFBC ADP from November 1st on. Important to note for this, first of all, two things. One, NFBC formats obviously do not have an IL. And so there are some pitchers who might go earlier in leagues where you can stash somebody on the IL, but in NFBC formats, they drop because, you know, Gerrit Cole not going to come back until June. Or how early are you going to draft somebody that has to sit on your bench, only a 7-man bench, has to sit on your bench for at least 2 months? And then also acknowledging that the NFBC also has some draft and hold formats. And so some of that is factored into this ADP right now. And so you'll see some different types of pitchers get bumped up because, again, you know, surety of innings and things like that. So we're going to go back and forth and just talk about some pitchers we like currently going after pick 300. I'll start because it's right after pick 300. And
I know who this is.
And we talked about this guy right before the show started. And
where is he? I can't find him.
Well, no, I found it. The problem is I found him before, and it was post 400. And I was like, I don't understand. Post 400, I don't get it.
That was my Eric Smolski impression, guys. I think it was pretty good.
It's Brian Baio.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing up Brian Baio because you just said, hey, somebody who's really good after pick 300 is like a Merrill Kelly type who's going to throw a lot of innings and have a low strikeout total, but, you know, be like somebody who has solid ratios and whatever. And we saw Brian Baio pitch nearly 170 innings last year with a 3.35 ERA and a 1.24 whip. And yes, the strikeouts weren't even Merrill Kelly level. It was a sub 18% strikeout rate. But this is a guy who made clear pitch mix changes, which led to, led him to put up this kind of like cutter heavy approach, which led him to induce weak contact and have the really good ratios and obviously the limited swing and miss. But he's only 26 years old next year. We have seen him miss bats more often in the past and something closer to like a 22% strikeout rate you were talking about, not be a huge strikeout guy. But I still think there's a world where like, yeah, Brian Baio is not going to be an ace, but is he a 3.5 pitcher with a 21% strikeout rate on a good team and who's going to start every fifth day? And, you know, again, we're talking about that safety and he started attacking the strike zone more and maybe Brian Baio is just boring but solid for your fantasy team.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I see a lot of others that are going ahead or more in that camp of, okay, I'm going to chase something bigger. Like Logan Henderson. I see Ryan Weathers, Grayson Rodriguez going before Baio. I see Jonah Tong and he goes, no. This is a much safer, more, a higher chance of breaking the top 40 starting pitchers for the year ahead. And I can't disagree with that one. It is interesting to see Payton Tolley right after him. There are two sides of the coin, right? And yes, I would be going for Baio more often in my deeper leagues. I can see an argument for Tolley in 12 teamers or shallower because of the more obvious peak for Tolley. If that four seamer is paired with a legitimate number two pitch that he can learn, and then he steps in the rotation and bing, bang, bada boom, that kind of thing. Right. And I'm never going to say that again.
Why not?
But you can see that. However, if you are trying to find that actual value past pick 300, yeah, Brian Baio is the one I choose. And I even say like Jameson Taillon right after. Right.
And or that you just mentioned is kind of the perfect example of what we're talking about past pick 300, because again, the Red Sox are going to make other moves. This is not the rotation they're going into the regular season with. I would be shocked. But if they did, Garrett Crochet, Sonny Gray, Brian Baio are locked into rotation spots. Yes. They just traded for Johan Oviedo to make him a starting pitcher. They said he is not depth. They expect him to be in the rotation. So that's four. Then you've got Cutter Crawford, Connelly Early, Kyle Harrison, Patrick Sandoval, Payton Tolley. So that's a lot of guys fighting for one spot. So you could draft Payton Tolley and say, hey, he's going to make the rotation. What if he doesn't? Right? What if Connelly Early does? Connelly Early was really good.
Well, Connelly Early should over Tolley, my view. What if and he's being drafted as such, which is good.
Was the headliner in the Devers trade. Like, what if they put him in the rotation?
Kyle Harrison, right. I don't believe that Oviedo is going to be starting that rotation out of camp. He can't throw strikes yet. And we'll see, I understand that they're saying he's not depth, like they want him to start and everything like that. But I think camp will certainly dictate that more. Yes. Also, as you also said, they could get another person. They can get another starter in this too. Tolley out of the pen makes a lot of sense because it's just very focused on a fastball at the moment. Or they'd even put him back in Triple A. Connelly Early certainly has the step on him at the very least.
Here's what I'll say before we get to my prediction, before we get to your player.
Okay.
I think the Red Sox use Brian Bayo and some of their outfield depth, and I think they trade for Freddy Peralta.
Huh. Well, that's still great for Bayo. So
that's my prediction.
There you go. You heard it here first, everybody.
So who's the pitcher you like out of the top three?
I mean, okay. So like just following this whole concept, so you have Tyone at 314. Now it's not out of the question that the Cubs move on from Tyone and try and trade him just because they want to shed as much money as possible right now. He has, I believe, 2 years left, especially now that Imanaga has also accepted the qualifying offer. I don't know. It's not out of the question. I believe he has 10 teams he can be traded to for his no trade clause. That said, I'm going to assume right now that Tyone is still there because, yeah, they should embrace the fact that they have the perfect pitcher for their defense. And he would just be easy value in a 15 teamer, in my view. Brady Singer is also the mold a bit, even though I don't like the volatility of him. I think he's a safer play than, say, Andrew Painter. I just don't want to deal with Clay Holmes, the Adobe. You know, Saris might want to go after Braxton Ashcraft, but that's one of those, what is actually the realistic ceiling? And you won't really know what you have for a while that I just don't want to deal with. Luis Gil is kind of interesting. I think he's the most exciting one I would consider at 334. Because there is a possibility the Yankees still go with Gil in that rotation. I'm not saying it's going to be that way. They might get another starter. He might, and also the game of like, oh, Rodon and Cole will return, and what's going to happen then is so silly. We've seen this so many times. Who's to say that everyone is healthy at right. that point every single year? But what happens when the Emmett Sheehan? What do you do? Like nearly 30 games this year. This happens all the time. Don't ever think about it that way, especially for a pick this late in your draft. You'll be so happy if Luis Gil is in that rotation to start the year and then you lose him because Cole comes back in like 2-3 months later. That's 2-3 months of value that you got for free, essentially. So that's totally fine. But my real one that I can't believe I'm seeing right now, I can't believe it. Seth Lugo at 350.
I knew you were going to say that.
What is this?
Yeah, Seth Lugo picked 346 since November 1st.
He was so good for 4 straight months, and then he had a back injury, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's literally, it's, like, he had the great season that we're all like, I don't know, in 2024, comes out of the woodshed of the winter and does the same thing again. And then it's like, my back hurts a little bit. I'm not really pitching as well. Sorry. That's it for my season. So here he is now. It's not an arm injury. It's an old man injury. Okay. What does an old man need? The winter. It's coming back. Great part. Great situation. Why don't we want that? I do not understand.
It's because he's 36 years old and doesn't throw hard. And so people are quick to write off guys like that. And they're basically like, you know, writing to the end of his career because of those struggles. And I agree with you. I think it's a tremendous value.
I would rather have that than Bailey Ober and Casey Mize, who are going at 279 for both of them. Actually, Reese Olson, 281. Can we talk about that for a second? That seems wrong, right? That's way too late for Reese Olson.
Yeah. I mean, again, he ended the year hurt. And so I think sometimes those people are kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
This is from from November 1st, by the way, is when we're taking this ADP from. Just
he
so we're
also only pitched 112 innings in 2024. So if you have durability concerns and you're doing like early drafts like this, I could see saying, or especially if you're doing like a draft and hold format, I could see saying, hey, I'm not going to take a shot on Reese Olson. Right. I like Reese Olson. I don't, you know, again, the strikeouts aren't really there, but it's everything I just mentioned with Brian Bayo, except better strikeouts and a better whip. And so I think him hovering around pick 300 is great value. And I'd be shocked if he doesn't tick up a little bit more. Remember, sure. like his arm was also, it was an arm injury. It was a shoulder injury. So maybe people want to see him throw more.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Well, I haven't gotten to my greatest value of this one, which is hilariously low to me, which is amazing. I might just say, right, you know, I might do one of those. I know my number one sleeper at way past pick 400. Join the Discord. But how are we checking this ADP? Well, Kyle Bland, of course, has made a wonderful NFBC ADP chart for PL Pro members. It does two things incredibly well. One, it lets you sort out starting pitchers from relievers. Oh, Kyle, what a guy. What an amazing guy. But what he also does is he shows you a chart of their trend from a certain date. And it's pretty great to see what we can do right now. What is Reese Olson since November 1st? Well, his ADP has dropped just a little bit, but it's dropped a bit since then. So I wonder if there's more fear about it. We'll see. Mm. But anyway, you guys can get this from PL Pro, and it's easily the best ADP tool out there. We are going to talk about Eric's next pick past 300 after this break. Eric, who is it? Who is the next guy that you're like, come on, I love this one past 300.
So part of me does want to say Lucas Giolito, who's at 365 right now. We don't really know where he's going to pitch, and he claims that he's fully healthy, but we don't know for sure. But I'm gonna watch that, because Giolito was pretty solid, and I would be shocked if he signs somewhere where he's not one of the top three or four arms in their rotation.
Eric, can you choose someone that didn't pitch for the Red Sox this year?
Yeah, that's why I didn't choose him.
Oh, okay, good.
Let's see. Let me find the next Red Sox arm. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to skip a couple of guys who I might want to come back to later.
Okay.
To talk about somebody I feel a little more sure about.
Mm.
And it's Landon Rupp at pick 416.
Yeah, I like this one.
Knee injury, not an arm injury, is what he's dealing with heading into the offseason and what shut him down. So we don't really have to do... I say that remembering that Cutter Crawford ended last year or 2 years ago with a knee injury and then didn't pitch at all last year. But theoretically, we should not have to wonder about his health going into spring training. We were big in on him, or I was, coming out of spring training because of some pitch mix changes that kind of helped him against lefties. We got a pretty good, not great season, a 3.8 ERA and 21.4% strikeout rate. Those are like, you know, fine, solid. A 1.48 whip really, really, really hurt you. That is not good. The walk rate wasn't particularly strong, but we saw a guy kind of like tinkering as the season was going on. And I think he made only two starts in the second half of the year, and that was when he was battling the injury and they were both terrible. And so you almost want to throw that out and just look at what he did in the first 96 and a third innings, which was like a 3.27 ERA. And we saw the you know, kick change that got added, which I think was a good pitch for him. The whip was still bad, but the walks are a little bit of a concern for me, but I see a guy settling in with a new arsenal in my pitch mix write-ups that I've done over the years. I've found pretty solid evidence that new pitches tend to click more in the second year after pitchers have a full year of utilizing them and figuring out how to use them and getting more comfortable with the grip, et cetera. And so I don't think like last year is a fluke for Landon Rupp. And I think if anything, we might see an incremental improvement again next year as he gets more comfortable with the arsenal. I don't see his spot in the Giants rotation being threatened right now. He's currently, I think, the third starter behind Logan Webb and Robbie Ray. And so, you know, are they going to add three more arms? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, they surely should get Zach Gallen. It just makes a little sense.
Sure.
In the world. I like that one, Landon Rupp, because I mean, it's kind of your mix a little bit. He should be a higher pitch count guy now. And as a sinker breaker guy, it does speak to the Aaron Nola approach, and the it's because it is a curveball that acts very similarly to it, where he should be able to go six innings. Also, it's kind of rare to see someone with that strikeout potential this late as well. One of the hardest things to find is strikeouts past pick 300. So that's an interesting one. And I think that's also, as you're mentioning, he has more security in that rotation than other interesting strikeout arms that we might mention on this. So that's a great call. I'm going to, oh man, there's so many I can go with. All right, I'm going to go with Cade Povich.
Okay.
And I think the Orioles overall are a bit of a opportunity because you had a team that just overall struggled more than we think they should. And there's Tyler Wells came back for four starts and has a sub-3 ERA doing it. It's not the sexiest looking thing, but he is a command pitcher and there might be some value there. Dean Kramer, I just can't do because it's Dean Werewolf and I just don't know what you're going to get. Is it going to be a full moon or not? I don't know. So I'm avoiding that. But Cade Povich to me does have the look of a command pitcher with multiple weapons. And against right-handers, think of it as the Noah Cameron approach. You have four seamers and you have curveballs and you have changeups. You also do have at times, it's a rarity and I keep yelling at him about it and it's pretty fun. Having the cutter inside to righties can be added. But as the season went on, I started to get a better glimpse of him really commanding that four seamer and changeup and curveball effectively. I think it's one of those situations where Cade Povich has always had to have his command in order to succeed. He's never been the flamethrower. That's never been his MO, even through high school and college and whatnot, as he was telling us at the beginning of the year. And he's always improved how he pitches to then take the next step, right? So after two seasons, I mean, he had 80 innings in 24 and 112 this past year. I think we're going to see more Cade Povich this season. I think he's going to come into his own. And you should have someone that's comfortably going to the sixth inning constantly and pitching for a winning ball club. So Cade Povich is someone that I think fits the bill of taking the next step forward and also having more volume than you typically would find this deep.
I agree. I think he's a name to watch because I think he might be the fifth starter right now in Baltimore.
He is, but Tyler Wells is the fourth.
Right. Yeah. And
Dean Kramer's the third. Yeah.
And Dean Kramer's the third. First of all, I would be shocked if Baltimore goes into the season with this rotation. So it's like maybe he gets bumped, but Trevor Rogers is the only lefty. So maybe they, you know, have Wells in kind of like a hybrid-y role. But yeah, that's certainly a name that I'm watching for. You mentioned Braxton Ashcraft. This is not my pick, but I am a little bit intrigued by Mike Burrows.
Oh, you too, huh?
There's enough going on with Mike Burrows that I'm like, okay. It's a decent enough fastball. It's not great. Pretty average command. Good, you know, vertical movement on it, but he keeps it up in the zone enough, but I would like to see it more. The changeup has been really, really good for him against lefties. The slider and the curveball are like fine against righties, and that's why I'm kind of like, because your fastball is fine but not great. You have a good changeup to lefties, and then you have fine slider performance and curveball performance to righties. The curve is not an oft-used pitch for him to righties. It's more of a weak contact pitch to lefties. He intrigues me, and if he has a spot in the rotation, he's somebody I could see myself using in deeper formats, but not somebody I'm like, hey, I really have to target. My pick, and I have very little data to back this up, but heading into last season, I believe both you and I had Spencer Arrighetti ranked kind of around like 50 to 60.
Unbelievable. You took my number one sleeper, the Pasta Pirate.
It was
504.
Right. Spencer Arrighetti right now going pick 504.
Nuts.
I don't understand. Spencer Arrighetti is 25 years old. Okay. we know he pitched 35 innings last year because he broke his thumb fielding batting practice. So, yeah, his numbers weren't particularly good. Maybe you think I'm oversimplifying by saying I'm literally throwing out all of 2025, but I'm literally throwing out all of 2025. It just doesn't matter to me. I think he made one start before he broke his thumb, and then he came back and was, I guess, kind of healthy. But like, a broken thumb on a pitching hand is like incredibly important for a pitcher, and it's going to impact performance. So I look at like what he did 2 years ago with a 27% strikeout rate, with a 13.1% swinging strike rate, with a deep enough, you know, pitch mix. We didn't see the sinker at all. We saw a sinker come in last year, and so that made it a true six pitch mix for him. Three fastball variations. You know, I love when pitchers are adding fastball variations, and he's got now two to lefties and two to righties, plus a curve, a sweeper, a change, like a deep pitch mix for a young guy who has shown that he can miss bats on what I believe will continue to be a good team. He's in my head, he's got a spot in the rotation. If you went on to FanGraphs, they have him behind Lance McCullers, Jason Alexander, Ryan Weiss. And I'm just, that's not going to happen.
Ryan Weiss, I can understand because they did just sign him, but maybe he's actually in the bullpen. So,
right. And Lance McCullers, look, if Lance McCullers is healthy, he's probably starting the year in the rotation. But like, how long is that going to last? I just don't understand why we have let 35 innings of pitching after a broken thumb totally turn us off from Arrigetti and make him go pick 504 right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's actually really interesting to see Rhett Lauder get favored a little bit more, who didn't pitch at all last year. And I'm very much on the Spencer Arrigetti train. There goes my lovely sleeper, guys. All right.
You could still say more things about him.
Whatever. Nah, I mean, when he was doing well in September and August of 2024, Spencer Arrigetti was throwing multiple pitches. And that's what I like. I enjoy his extension as well. He has a flat attack angle. It's fun. Speaking of extension, look, I don't think he's going to get the job, and I'm not going to bang the drum like I did last year. However, just monitor Sawyer Gibson long, please. Okay, that's all. I know it's become a meme in some ways, but it's only because he just didn't get his opportunity. And I thought he would get an opportunity. And when Sawyer Gibson Long gets his opportunity, I'm very much in on him in 12 teamers. Okay, cool. Nip that one in the bud. Speaking of Red Sox, Dustin May is down here at 550. And somebody's going to sign him.
For sure.
And start him. And I'm going to say that Dustin May goes to the Astros. And I don't know if that's what I said with Eno last week, but that makes a ton of sense to me. And he's a stuff guy, and there is the Astros and all of that. And yeah, he'll go regularly. That's a good defense behind him. I think the second that you see Dustin May sign, he'll be going closer in the, let's say, Michael Wacha territory. You know, Mitch Keller, Robbie Snelling around like 350 or something like that. And he's in 550 right now. Dustin May still is, he hasn't taken the next step yet, but it is a sinker that should induce outs. It is a good breaking ball, and there is a cutter in there, and there is a proper curve as well. I could get this wrong, but long story short, oh no, right, it's a four seamer upstairs. That's what it is. That's the fourth pitch. Four seamer that he actually turned to instead of the sinker later on in the year because it is flat as far as the attack angle goes. And I can understand why he would do that, but you should be going more with the sinker. That's way more horizontal movement. And I would imagine there is a world where he utilizes all four of those pitches effectively. With a good defense behind him, he can become a good ERA pitcher. So just keep an eye on that with Dustin May. And sorry to bring up another Red Sox, guys. I apologize. I'm just shocked that Eric didn't do it.
Well, Dustin May is not currently a Red Sox. So that's okay.
Neither is Giolito, but you know what? Sure. Doesn't matter. Who else you got?
Who else do I got? So I got a question.
Oh,
for you, because my eyes keep going to this pitcher.
Oh, no.
Who was a free agent.
Uh-huh.
Who battled injuries last year.
Uh-huh.
And does have some injury history, which I think is pushing the draft price down.
But prior
to last year, had ERAs of 3.59, 3.50, 4.04, 4.17. Has had strikeout rates hovering around about 22%. And again, prior to last year, has had good whips. And I wonder if a healthy Zach Eflin is not a bad choice at this point in the draft or after pick 300, because sure, maybe he goes 140 innings, but then you cut him and you move on. And like, you know, is he going to be just kind of like some version of Merrill Kelly who doesn't pitch 190 innings? I think it's possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just really about health with him and having his normal curveball, essentially. If he can have that, then everything is grand. But yeah, I think Zach Eflin, you stick him in a good situation. He can absolutely way outperform this, and it won't come with the same 4.2 inning volatility of some of the other ones as well. Yeah, I think that's a great call there. And as you were describing it, you might have heard me whisper into the mic, but I like that call. I mean, you might have gone with Chris Bassett instead.
I just don't want to do that.
I feel like Zach Eflin has a little bit more in the tank, and then Bassett, I would much rather that one. I want to mention one more each, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. All right, Eric, I can't help but mention Grant Holmes in this, the real estate broker. And
he's better
the
than
reason
ever.
I say this is because just yesterday,
he's better than ever.
Eric, can you tell the people what you sent me yesterday?
Sure. So we've reached the season where I'm forwarding a lot of tweets to Nick.
I love it.
Just messages and things that we see that, you know, might impact what we're talking about on here. But there was a David O'Brien from The Athletic was reporting what Alex Anthopoulos had said during one of the meetings or a press conference at the winter meetings. The Braves said they're treating Grant Holmes like any other healthy pitcher right now. Cool. Great. He had no setbacks in his key non-surgical recovery from a partial UCL tear. So he partially tore his UCL. He opted to not have surgery, but he's had no setbacks. And Alex Anthopoulos said he talked to Grant Holmes today, and Grant Holmes told him his stuff is better than ever before after rest and strengthening. And I responded with the Ron Burgundy, I don't believe you, Jif, because I don't.
Whoa, what,
I,
don't the,
I don't believe you. I don't believe
the, you. I don't believe you what?
Jif.
No.
Jif.
If you sign a contract with Pitcher Gifts, Inc., it says in the fine print that you have to pronounce it with a hard G.
Gifts.
This is how I know nobody reads contracts, because it's not actually in there. So
I know it's not in there. Don't worry. But I play a lot.
We don't actually believe that the real estate broker is going to be totally healthy and good to go, but you know, keep track of that one too. Why not? If he is actually in that rotation and he's going this late, sure, I will take a chance on that. If it's about health, if that's really the only problem is if they're healthy or not, well, that's a binary thing.
Right.
You will know. And if they're pitching, that means they are not hurt. I mean, sure, they could be hiding it and they're not as effective. Fine. But it's different than just, is he going to be good or not in general? Or does he have a rotation spot kind of thing? And he's going back and forth like Dodgeritis, or how many innings is he going to get? If it's just blanket health, that is a much easier decision process to have. So I had to mention that one. My real answer, though, is Tyler Mahle. Tyler Mahle had a much better season than people want to give him credit from last year. And he's a free agent right now. And I'm not saying that Tyler Mahle is going to be the old 27-25% strikeout rate guy that he has been in the past, but he just had a 2.18 ERA and 1.13 WHIP, okay, in 16 starts. Again, I'm not the kind of guy that just quotes ERA and WHIP and says, oh, it's called a done deal. We're over here. No more analysis. What I am trying to say is that he got above 92 miles per hour on his four seamer. He was commanding it decently well. Splitter and slider, and there's a cutter. And look, you throw him in a good situation. He is the kind of pitcher that we often see getting signed for a year or two to fill out the rotation in situations where they need something, some good depth. He'll give them something out of the gates, and they'll let him go more than 70 pitches, right? They'll throw him as much as he possibly can do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it'll be bad. I don't think it'll just be outright like 5 ERA or anything like that. I think it's actually going to be helpful, especially if he's looking just fine in the spring. So Tyler Mahle is someone I'm circling around pick 350.
I like that call. I've always been a Mahle fan, and so I'm would be happy to see him bounce back. I'm gonna call out one more, and then I'm gonna end by just like speed listing some guys I'm intrigued by but aren't my picks right now because of various things. I do want to also just hat tip. We talked about his teammate, so I'm not gonna belabor the point. But Michael Wacha at pick 352, essentially, mm-hmm. You know, Wacha is boring but effective. And, you know, he's going pick 352 right now. If you go by just the Fangraphs player rater, which, you know, you don't have to, but he finished the 72nd ranked starting pitcher last year because he threw over 170 innings. He had a solid ERA, had a solid whip. He won 10 games. That's just kind of who Michael Wacha is. And so at pick 350 on a what will be a good Royals team, I think there's value there. But I am gonna say that it's kind of like my Spencer Arrighetti pick, but I'm going to go with Sean Manaea.
Oh.
And Sean Manaea right now is going pick 369.8, so pick 370. We know that he started the year last year hurt. He's pitching through injuries. Then he was, you know, in a piggyback situation. And he had some back injuries, had some elbow things. There's, you know, it wasn't the healthiest season. But the changes that the Mets made to him in 2024 were real. It wasn't like he's the same dude. And is he a 3.47 ERA pitcher, you know, with over a K per inning? Maybe not. But I also don't think he's a 5.64 ERA pitcher. And I think the Mets want him in the rotation taking the ball every 5 days because, A, they don't have a lot of other options, and, B, before last season, they signed him to do that, to be a maybe not their ace, but a frontline starter for them. So I think he's going to be in the rotation. I think he's going to have one of the top three spots in the rotation going into the season. And I think we have seen with that team and that development, the team that is prioritizing defense a lot more this year. And I know the Marcus Semien trade isn't like super exciting from a fantasy perspective, except Semien and Lindor up the middle are a far better defensive combination for your starting pitcher than what you would have gotten with like Jeff McNeil or Brett Beatty or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Base. Good point.
And that is important. And so I think that Sean Manaea, you know, a guy with a 120 career whip, like I just think that there's a chance that he is valuable as a pick going near pick 400 for as long as he remains healthy in the Mets rotation.
And I'm actually looking up right now because, okay, wait, then hold on. How good is Beatty? Beatty, slightly above average at third base. So who's going to be the first baseman for the Mets next year?
So I think they're going to try to sign somebody. I think also if they sign a third baseman, Vientos could be the first baseman defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you don't rule out Alonso going back there.
Alonso, you know, ranked as the second worst first baseman from outside.
Really good, really good at scoops, though. If you look up the data on picks, really on good picks? At scoops. But yeah, that's his thing. But I think the defense will be much better for the Mets. They've made it a priority, and the Semien trade very clearly shows that that's not just, you know, words being said at press conferences. And that's important for a guy, especially, you know, like Manaea has lowered the ground ball rate in the 2 years with the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
So he is potentially, with the way that they are having him attack, he's not inducing as many ground balls as he had previously. But, you know, low arm slot, like sinker guys are going to get some ground balls. And so that's valuable. And again, I think the Mets are going to be a good team. So solid chance of wins as well.
Yeah. I'm not biggest fan of Sean Manaea, but I think that we kind of saw that he's a two pitch guy and isn't able to really go as deep and wasn't really as effective with commanding his pitches as he was the previous year. However, Sean Manaea, I do grasp if he goes somewhere else, maybe there's something else he adds on to, and maybe it does come out well for him in the long run. I am going to just say a couple names like you were going to, that I think shouldn't be overlooked. Michael Soroka, 436, just signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and it does seem like he's going to be in that rotation, at least for right now. And his compadre, Eduardo Rodriguez as well. So there are those two guys are your volume arms, and the Diamondbacks in the past have been good defenses. Not so good last year, but they have caused Merrill Kelly to be a major thing. They've helped out Zach Gallen and Ryan Nelson. I can see that actually panning out pretty well, especially earlier on in the season. There's also Quinn Matthews. And I think the Cardinals are going to need some help in that rotation. They have nothing right now in that rotation. They just traded away Sonny Gray. It's Andre Pallante as their number two. I would not be shocked, even though Quinn Matthews was not as good in the second half last year and kind of dealt with some hurdles there. He will be making a case in all likelihood to be in that rotation out of spring training. And I think that you're going to see a lot of people go after Quinn Matthews. Mm-hmm. He's currently at 530 in ADP, and I would be surprised if come March he is in that same spot. So Quinn Matthews is someone that I would certainly be circling there. Who are your last ones that you want to mention before we round out this podcast, Eric?
So I should say he didn't technically qualify, but Shane Smith, 297.8.
Doesn't qualify.
Pretty solid first season for Shane Smith. You know, there's some, the team is bad, but, you know, he was pretty good. I can't quit, might never quit Zebby Matthews at pick 315.
You can do it, Eric. I believe
we'll see, you. We'll see how it all shakes out. Who else was in here? We talked about before we started recording about Jared Jones, and you know, he's going this late. We don't know when his return is, but I do really like Jared Jones.
Justin Verlander, if he does return, JT Ginn as well, even though it's the, yeah, not a good home park at all. Has flashes.
I'm going further down. First of all, Jose Quintana is always going to sign with the team and pitch pretty well. Like it's going to happen. Like it just is who he is. Yeah. You're going to roll your eyes because I've talked about this guy so many times. But I'm still convinced that Patrick Sandoval is in the Red Sox rotation at the start of the season. He's making like $9 million for next year. They signed him to a 2-year deal to recover from Tommy John and then pitch in the rotation. We've seen an elite cutter, elite changeup from him in the past. I think there are lots of different things with his fastball variations. I think that he could be an intriguing arm. Again, these are guys I'm watching, not guys who I picked, because there are things that I think need to happen, which is why you're going to throw up in your mouth. But I'm also going to mention Alek Manoah, who is going to start for the Angels. And like,
maybe it
wasn't too long ago that Alek Manoah was like in the Cy Young conversation. And I know things fell off and fell off hard, but he's still, I believe he's 27. I'm going to look this up right now.
Yeah, I do want to mention with the
27 years old.
Yeah,
right. 2022 was when he had a 2.24 ERA in basically 200 innings.
Yeah,
And then he had a bad 2023 and got hurt, and then we didn't see him pitch at all last year. Again, not a choice, but somebody I'm watching because it wouldn't be the craziest thing if a 27-year-old former top prospect who was not healthy just winds up getting healthy and needs a fresh start. I wish he had gone to a different team, but whatever. You know, so that's somebody I'm also just like watching. And then I mentioned to you also, Kyle Harrison, just as a, we've dreamed on what he could be in the past. There's a shot for him to get in the Red Sox rotation. And if he gets a shot in the Red Sox rotation, you know, there's some potential for him to be an interesting arm late.
Sure.
And also, I guess I should say, Zach Littell, 404. He's just kind of like, he delivered. We thought he was going to lose his spot in the Rays rotation time and time again last year, and he didn't. He is a free agent, so we don't know where he's going to wind up. But there is a world where Zach Littell fits that same kind of like Zach Eflin, Merrill Kelly mold, where you're not getting strikeouts, but you know he threw 187 innings last year, and you're getting decent ratios and innings, and depending on the team he goes to, that could be valuable enough going, you know, after pick 400.
I'm going to give you some Patrick Sandoval, always known as the Irish Panda, some stats about him. Last two seasons, 2023 and 24, where he did combine for about 220 innings between them in 44 starts, which is kind of funny when you think about that. He had exactly a 151 whip in both of those seasons. He's had one season underneath a 9.4% walk rate, and that was in 2020, and it's 37 innings. In only 1 year has he had a whip better than 134, and that was 121 way back in 21, which is kind of hilarious too. His career whip is 139, walk rate of 10%.
Yep.
And this is the one that I just feel bad for the guy. His win-loss record is 19-45.
Yeah.
And I get that he has a good swing strike rate. He traditionally has one because of the changeup that does really, really well. It destroys right-handers, 20% swing strike rate. And he has a slider that he can make effective against lefties. He did in the past for a 20% swing strike rate. He did not in 2024 at all, 11% there. But the sinker and the four-seamer are just not good pitches. They get clobbered.
And
I don't see him becoming a command swatch because that requires you have to be on time. You have to be wielding this stuff properly in order to make those happen. That's why swatches exist, because they generally have needed to survive with command as they aren't hard throwers. So I'm not going to believe in the Irish Panda being in that Red Sox rotation. I hope he is. It would be really fun. You know, I once sent him a panda with a four-leaf clover and put it in it into his locker room. I did that. I have the 32 whiffs shirt of Patrick Sandoval. Big fan. But I'm a realistic optimist. Sure. And I don't see that happening. I'm also surprised you didn't mention Bowden Francis, because that was such a conversation a year ago.
Yeah, and, well, like 2 years ago. Yeah, I'll just say the Patrick Sandoval thing. 2022 was his first real year as a full time starter at the big league level. So there's only been two full seasons at the big league level as a starter, because 2024 he got hurt and pitched under 80 innings, and that injury history is part of it. But when we're talking about like what his numbers are, I think there's just some, not small sample size, but acknowledging that like 1 year he was great, 2022. He was solid in 2021 in not a full year. He was a 4.11 ERA, but the whip was terrible in 2023. So the whip concerns are always concerns, right? That's the Oviedo concern too. The Red Sox clearly are okay saying, you have plus raw stuff, your command is terrible, and we think that we can help you get better with your command. And I think the reason that they feel like that is because they add multiple fastball variations, and they say, instead of you throwing, you know, whatever, your Brian Bayo, instead of you throwing the sinker to lefties that you can't throw, or this four-seamer that gets hit all the time, you're now going to throw a cutter. And I think that Patrick Sandoval,
he needs a cutter. That'd be cool.
He's going to throw a cutter, right? Like,
he might.
Fastballs are bad. The changeup is really, really good. The slider has a history of really against lefties. So you have the foundational pieces there to be a solid pitcher if you can hide your fastballs.
Totally. And
the best way to hide your fastballs, even if you're not a plus command guy, maybe he has, maybe he winds up being able to command the cutter, and the cutter itself isn't a, oh my God, this pitch is amazing, but it's a pitch I can get for strikes against righties. And then I also mix in a four seamer, or I also mix in a sinker. And then even though those pitches aren't great, I'm now keeping hitters off of my fastballs because I have many of them. And so the reason I didn't pick him, and I didn't, you know, I mention him here, is just because I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what it looks like, because I think you have to at least be able to identify what is the path for this guy to have success.
Oh, right. And the Red Sox are giving him some sort of
clear path for Sandoval. And it might be that he never walks that path, but we know what it is, and we can watch it and say, all right, is this happening or not? And so that's why it's somebody that intrigues me, because I like being able to say, this is the one or two things I'm watching for. And if I see them, great. And if I don't see them, I don't really need to think about this anymore.
Did you say that the Bowden Francis thing was 2 years ago? Because it was last year.
Well, no, we talked about him a lot two years ago,
no.
Which was when he ended the year on that really strong note.
No.
Yes.
Eric, that was in 24. That was in 24.
Right. That's two seasons ago.
No. This time last year, we were talking about Bowden Francis.
Oh, yeah. This time last year, we were talking about Bowden Francis because he ended 2024 on a high note.
Yeah.
But when you said
it feels like it was 3 years ago, though,
you meant in the 2020 season.
Yeah. I mean,
you and I were both saying, don't get into the inflated.
We were not interested in Bowden Francis, and he was so quickly forgotten about. And that's, I think he's the perfect example of like your amazing stretch the end of year that everyone is just so into, and you just can't always listen to the 13 starts or the 330 ERA and then 9.93 whip. No, but that is going to do for this episode.
It is.
We went a little bit longer than expected.
But still under an hour, people, so we're doing it.
Still under an hour. We got you. We respect your time.
And ours.
And ours, yes. And it has been a lovely season, lovely year doing this with you, Eric.
Been a lovely 2025. We're not going to do this on the mics until 2026.
Yes, that's right.
So thank you for the time. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you in the new year with brand new content, and with two married dudes on here talking pitching. Absolutely. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I wish everybody happy holidays, happy new year. Enjoy your time off. Enjoy your time with your family or solo relaxation time. And we'll see you in the new year.